Testament has numerous characters that are great character studies for us. Great studies because they provide such incredibly good examples. We've talked before about epitaphs that could be used to describe some of them. Abraham, a friend of God, or David, a man after God's own heart. Things of that nature. We think of others like Joshua, who was this great leader of God's people, who made this incredible stand of commitment regarding both himself and his entire family. Or we think of somebody like Joseph, who stood up against Potiphar's wife and made a stand that cost him time in prison, and yet he remained faithful to God throughout all of the adverse circumstances that came into his life. And so I think it'd probably be pretty difficult if I asked you to name the three most influential characters in the Old Testament. How would you name the three most influential characters? I don't know that there's a right answer to that, so it's not that I'm quizzing you and you need to come up with the same three that I do, but there's a passage in Ezekiel that I think is just a fabulous passage. It says something as God is prophesying to the nation through this prophet Ezekiel. He's saying that the nation is not following me. And not only are they not following me, they're persistently not following me, not drawing close to me at all. And in the 14th chapter, as he's describing that, he talks about when the land sins against me by persistent unfaithfulness. That's what they were doing. He said, that's in verse 13. He says, they're just persistent. They won't do what God asked them to do. He says, I'll stretch out my hand against it. I'll cut off its supply of bread, send famine on it, and cut off man and beast from it, even if these three men, Noah, Daniel, and Job. That's just a great statement. I mean, the prophet says, even if Noah and Daniel and Job were there, they wouldn't be able to save anybody but just themselves. I mean, you think about the impact of that statement. God pulls them out because I think God is saying, these are people that are just exemplary in their faith, in their dedication. And he says, and yet, even if these three were in a land like the nation of Israel is right now, they wouldn't be able to bring anybody else with them. Well, think about what that says about the men, not just the nation. Think about what that says about the men. I mean, wouldn't that be one of the things? Can you imagine how happy would you be if that's the kind of thing that God would write on your tombstone? That you fell into that classification, that he was going to say, this is one of the three that I'm going to use as an example as to the amount of influence that they should and could have on other people. And even with their holiness, with their righteousness, with their faith and their commitment to God. I mean, I'd love to be included in a group of three that God was saying are this righteous. Would you not? Well, that's what we're getting to do this week. And I just thought maybe it'd be good tonight to take just a little bit of time to share with the parents and with the rest of the congregation some of the things that we've been looking at in the first half of the VBS. Because all the children this week have already had, that have been attending the VBS, all the children have had two opportunities already to visit with one of these three characters and to see the life of one of these three portrayed. That's Daniel. Great, great character of God. If you want to turn in your Bibles to Daniel chapter 1, we're just going to make a couple of points out of the first couple chapters. Some of the things that the kids have already experienced, some things that we can learn from the life of Daniel, this wonderful Bible character, because his story is not like all other Bible characters. It isn't that you get him at a stage of life where maybe you find everybody else. We're going to find Daniel coming onto the scene in our picture under very adverse circumstances, but pretty early in life. What's going to happen is you're going to have Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, who is going to besiege Jerusalem. And that's just the idea of besieging. They literally encircle it. And it takes a while, but they encircle it and they just continue to stay there. They continue to fight as they're coming into the area of Judah. And this is in the third year, it tells us, of Jehoiakim. And so it's going to put it somewhere in the neighborhood of about 605 B.C., something like that. And the only reason I mention the date is because I want you to see what transpires as this continues to go on. So somewhere in the neighborhood of 605 B.C., somewhere in the third year of Jehoiakim, who is king, Nebuchadnezzar comes in, and he's going to besiege Jerusalem. He's going to attack. He's going to take Jehoiakim captive, along with others captive. He's going to take some of the treasures that are in the temple of God, and he's going to remove them and take them back. That's almost as an attempt to show. He set them up in the temples of their gods in those high places. And so it's almost an attempt to show our gods are superior. We'll take these things, move the things of your God to the house of our gods. And they take those things. Daniel's one of those that's taken. But just think about that. We talked about that with our kids. They came through in the VBS and talk. How difficult would that be if somebody says, I'm taking you, I'm seizing your possessions, and I'm taking you and I'm taking you to a land that you're not familiar with at all? I mean, that'd be tough. I can just tell you, I've never experienced that. I know others have. There have been people who have been prisoners of war, who have been taken captive, who have been kept somewhere else. And that's normally those who are adults. And how difficult is that? Imagine now, we're talking about a boy, not an adult. Daniel's a boy at this stage of his life. Daniel's somewhere probably in the age range of 13, 14, 15 years old, something like that. So I just want you to imagine that you're taking somebody like a Bennett who's sitting over there and saying, you know what, we're going to take you out of your land and away from your family. We're going to take you captive. You don't get to be with your people anymore. We're going to put you in the king's palace and we're going to make you a servant of the king. How hard would that be as a young boy to endure? And yet what we're going to see in Daniel is Daniel's faith didn't start when he was taken into captivity. There's a great lesson, I think, in this for us, even for our younger people. Daniel was already one who was dedicated to God. He was one already who had purpose in his life. And he'll make some statements of commitment and purpose even in these first couple chapters of Daniel. Just think what it is for a young boy to be taken away and to have the kind of strength and faith in God that he can maintain that though he's removed from all things familiar to him. Nebuchadnezzar three times did that to Jerusalem. Came back against the city a second time. Came back against the city a third time until finally they destroyed all the things of God as they took the rest of Jerusalem into Babylonian captivity. And they found themselves now captive to this foreign nation that served many gods. What else did they do? We told the kids, imagine not only do they bring you in, but as they bring you in, they change your name. They change your name for a reason. They're trying to swallow you up, to assimilate you into their culture, into their way of thinking. And you think about how true is that of the world in which we live? That it tries to assimilate us. It tries to pull us in. It tries to present before us the things of the world that would cause us to leave God and instead come to the world. Well, so they changed the names. Daniel's name, which Daniel, meaning God is my judge, name was changed to Belteshazzar. It wasn't without reason. As God saw these young boys having their names changed, he certainly would have understood. The Babylonians certainly would have understood these things. In the first seven verses, you see this transpiring. And the Belteshazzar is a name that is attributed to one of the gods of Babylon. So it would mean of Daniel, now he's Belteshazzar. And so he is one who serves the god Bel. And so it's a servant of Bel. And he had three friends that are described in those first few verses that had come with him, that were taken into captivity with him. They all had Jewish names just like he did. He had a friend, Hananiah. He had a friend who was Mishael. He had a friend, Azariah. And all three of their names were changed. Their names were changed to Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. That wasn't just to change a name. It just wasn't to make it familiar. Shadrach was an indication of the God of the sun for the Babylonians. Meshach was a god or goddess of the moon. And so they were identifying these ones as one who serves the god of the sun or one who serves the god of the moon. These are Babylonian names associated with Babylonian gods. And Abednego just means just that, a servant of the god Nego. And so he was named as were the others, as if they are servants of foreign gods. They're in a foreign land. And yet look at some of the things that we're going to see from Daniel. I think we're going to see some things that help us to understand. There's a lot of ways these guys could have responded. I wish I could tell you I'd respond just like Daniel when I was 15 years old, but I don't know that I would. As a matter of fact, I would say pretty good chance, knowing my life at 15, I would not have. I don't know how many people at 15 I meet today that I think, you know what, that person's got the kind of faith that you couldn't do anything to shake the faith. That's a hard faith to establish that early on in life. Normally it is the continued experiences with God that cause us to build that real deep faith. We told the kids, we said, can you imagine how awful that would be to be taken into Babylon? And they said, you're going to have to eat all this awful food. So I asked the kids, I said, what are your favorite foods? And you might expect what kind of answers I got. I mean, there was cake and ice cream, and there was pizza. There was chicken of all sorts, chicken fingers, chicken nuggets, chicken that was just fried. There were a couple of health-conscious kids that passed through the group, and I had a broccoli as a favorite. For their all-time favorite food was a broccoli from one, salad from another, but it really doesn't make any difference. I said, so that's what the table's spread with. Imagine what they've said is, we're going to spread the table, and it's spread with broccoli and salad and pizza and cake and ice cream and cookies and chicken nuggets and chicken fingers and everything that you can imagine is laid out on the table. I said, wouldn't that be awful? Gross. I don't want any of that. They just all look strange, like you might expect they would. They're going, no, that would be good. That was exactly the point. The king is putting before him the king's delicacies, all as a part of not only helping them to grow, but to assimilate them into that culture, to make them Babylonian. And so he's putting forth this food exactly the way the world tries to put its food on our table and say, look at it. Nobody's denying that it looks good. Nobody's denying that there can be some pleasure in it. But Daniel said, this isn't what I want for my life. This isn't the direction that I want for my life. And for whatever reason that may have been, maybe it was the fact that it was foods that were unclean. It just tells us it was the king's delicacies. Maybe it were foods that were unclean. And Daniel knew they were unclean by Jewish law. And so he was going to refuse to partake of them because they were unclean. Or maybe Daniel was thinking like Paul had described in 1 Corinthians when he said that there was food that was offered to idols, and that was difficult for some people, especially because they thought, if I eat food that's been offered to an idol, it's no different than participating with the idol, and I'll be acknowledging that I serve the gods of Babylon rather than the one true God. It doesn't tell us why he denied it, but he said he wouldn't do it. And look what it says about him when he makes that statement. Verse 8, Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself. That's a great statement about a 15-year-old kid, I got to tell you. A 15-year-old kid that had enough mind and enough faith to purpose in his heart that he would not do something that would cause him to violate what he knew God would have him do. You just think about that. I mean, that's a strong statement. There are kids that can make that statement. There are kids that can follow through with that. But that's a strong statement. We need to have We need to have more purpose like Daniel. We need to make sure that whether we're children or adults, that we're going to purpose in our heart what we're going to do. And that I'm only going to serve God. And if something else is laid out before me, does it look attractive? Yes, it looks attractive, but that isn't the point at all. Is it within keeping of what God has asked of me? And if not, Daniel had purposed. He was not going to defile himself. But there are a lot of things you can do with that. How are you going to react in regards to that? Because I think that's one of the points of Daniel. Daniel expresses great commitment. Daniel has great purpose in his life. And so when that happens, it says that he had decided that he wouldn't do that. Therefore, he requested of the chief of eunuchs that he might not defile himself. I love that statement about Daniel. I got to tell you, at 15, if I wasn't going to do something, I was more likely just to say I wasn't going to do it. But Daniel understood how to even deal with the issue, it seems. And so Daniel requests of the chief of the eunuchs, please, don't make me eat these foods. Please, allow me just to eat some vegetables. Allow me just to have the seeds or the grain instead of eating these things. And the chief of the eunuchs says, Daniel, I don't know. That's going to cause me problems. The king has had a decree, and if he sees you after eating just seeds for a period of time, because it was a 3-year training program, it tells us, said that the king had set aside 3 years, and he picked these kids. Isn't it interesting, the description of these kids to begin with? This is the cream of the crop, and it tells you that. Daniel's right there. He's at the top. He's the cream of the crop. The king said, I want you to pick the kids that can be trained, kids who are wise, kids who have good intellect, kids who can learn, because they're going to have to learn the language. They're going to have to learn all the customs of the land, all the different things associated with Babylon. I want you to find those kind of kids, kids that are strong, kids that are good looking, no blemish on these kids. I want kids that you can point to later and say, that's who we're proud of, because that's what the kingdom of Babylon is all about. So you got this great kid, Daniel, and his friends, who are the cream of the crop. And you've got all this presented to him, and Daniel says, I can't do it. So imagine Daniel and the others go on a vegetarian or a grain and seed diet for the next 3 years. We're not talking about for just a couple of days. That's why Ashpenaz, the chief of the eunuchs, was so afraid. What's Nebuchadnezzar going to do? He says, when I bring you into the king, and you're all gaunt of face, and you've lost weight, and you look worse than you did before, what's the king going to do to me? And so Daniel just kind of continued to work the plan. He was persistent too. Daniel went to the servant who was immediately over them. And talked to the servant who was immediately over them. He says, let me ask you this then. Don't you just love the persistence of this kid? I got to serve God. I got to find a way to make this work. So the chief of the eunuchs says, no deal. So he goes to the servant right above him and says, tell you what, 10 days. Let us just do a test for 10 days. Nothing bad's going to happen in 10 days, but you'll be able to come back and you'll be able to look at us and see. Love the persistence of Daniel. Daniel was willing to continue to stick to it. He had made a commitment. Somebody gave him resistance. Daniel didn't back down. Daniel says, I've got to push harder on this. And he did. Daniel was a kid who had faith. He was going to put the trust in God. He says, I'm going to do this God's way. If that is defiling myself, I know God doesn't want me to defile myself. So I trust that if I will keep from defiling myself, that God will do what He needs to do to make me right. And he ate grain and seeds or vegetables for 10 days. The servant came back and looked at Daniel, and it says that he was rounder of face. That he was healthier and stronger. He looked better than all of the others. Daniel and these friends of his, the four of them together, looked better than all the ones who had been eating the delicacies. And so the servant relented and allowed Daniel to stay on that diet. I think Daniel said, here's a lesson for us. I think it's the same lesson that God taught through the prophet Malachi and other places. Sometimes God says, you're going to have to trust me and do it my way. And sometimes my way may not seem like it's going to be the best way, but you're going to have to trust me and do it my way. Sometimes we truly do fight against the Lord that way. We fight and we push to try to do His will, but to do His will our way. And sometimes God says, just do things my way. You ever learn that lesson in life? That sometimes you're doing something and somebody says, I'm telling you, if you do it this way, it'd be much, much easier and much, much better. But you still do it the old way. And somebody says, I'm telling you, if you'll do it this way, then it'll go much easier. I used to put duct tape on duck board. Most people in this part of the country have never seen duck board, but in Florida they just use it. It's a fiberglass piece of board that you cut and fold over, and that's how you make the duck work. They don't use any metal, back in the old days anyway. And you use a silver tape on it, and guys would sit there and zip that stuff on and put it all around, and they'd do three or four joints, and I'd have a half a joint done kind of thing. But I was determined. It just seemed backwards to do it the way they were doing it. All of that seemed unnatural to me, and so I kept pushing through, doing it my way. You know, and I got guys all around me saying, I'm telling you, you can produce twice as much if you do it this way. This is the way the roll is designed to be used. This is the way you're supposed to use the tool. It takes a while sometimes, but then you learn. God says, trust me, do it my way. My way works. That's what He told them in Malachi. He said, see if I don't bless you beyond what you can even imagine if you'll just do what I told you to do. How many times does God say that in life? Daniel understood. I need to do things the way that God would have me to do it. It had its effect, not only on him, but it had its effect on those that were around him. The Lord was with him. Why? Because he was doing what God had asked him to do. The Lord was with him. And he blessed him. Sounds very much similar to what you read about Joseph in Genesis chapter 39, when it talks about when he was in prison and the Lord cared for him, or the Lord was with him, or the Lord blessed him while he was in prison. He did the same thing for Daniel. And it said Daniel's friends got smarter. They gained more wisdom. They were able to decipher and do things for the king that all of the other seers couldn't. It said they had 10 times the ability of the ones who were the Babylonians. Why? Because that's exactly what God wants us to understand. Is you can fight as hard as you want to fight, and you can't even begin to amass the kind of power that God can amass through you if you just allow Him to work through you. And He tells us that. That's why He says things like in Ephesians, He can do exceedingly abundantly above all that we ask or think, according to the power that works in us. Sometimes we work so hard rather than just trying to allow God to work. He can do more than we can do. And that was what Daniel learned in the second chapter. Nebuchadnezzar had a dream. We had a little box in the classroom, and I gave all the kids a challenge today. As they came in and they sat down in the room of Daniel, and as they're talking to Daniel, Daniel says to them, I've got a box here. I need you to each take a crayon and a piece of paper, and I need you to draw what's inside the box. And I set the box back on the table. And all the kids are just standing there. Some of them started to draw. I said, be careful, because if you draw the wrong thing, then you're going to go to prison or lose your life. Well, the kids pulled the crayons back off the paper. One of them said, seriously, are you going to really send us to prison? Well, I wasn't going to send them to prison, but you wanted them to get the point of the story. So finally, in every class, either early on or a couple minutes later, the kids are saying, we don't know what's in the box. How can we draw it? Isn't that exactly what happened in Daniel chapter 2? Nebuchadnezzar had a dream. And he told all the seers, I'm not even going to tell you what the dream is. I want you to tell me what the dream is and then interpret it. And all the seers said, we can't do this. No man can do this. So Nebuchadnezzar said, well, then I'll have you all killed. And that's what he set about to do. And he started putting to death all the wise men of Babylon. And then they went to see Daniel and they said, Daniel, it's time for you. Because he was one of the wise men of Babylon. And Daniel said, let me get a little bit more time. And he asked the king, can I have just a little bit more time to figure this out? And he realized something. He went back and he got his friends, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and he said, you guys, we've got to get down on our knees and we've got to pray. Because I can't do this. But God can. And so Daniel learned that lesson as well. It takes help. And the kids learned about helping today. That you cannot do it by yourself. Never have been able to. The whole point of the old law seems to be to make that point. You can't do it by yourself. You need God to accomplish any of it. I remember James Dobson one time talking about one of his children, his boy. He said he was inside the house, James was, inside the house. His boy was outside, and he noticed his boy was playing in the back of his pickup truck. And he wasn't supposed to be outside the house at all. Probably wasn't supposed to be up in the truck either, but he was in the bed of the pickup truck. The tailgate was down. James Dobson said, so he went out there to get him and to correct him for being out there. But by the time he got out there, the boy was already trying to climb out of the truck, but then realized that he couldn't find the ground. He didn't know how far it was below him, but he knew he didn't want to let go. So the little kid's hanging onto the tailgate, feet draped over, and James Dobson said as he got close enough, he knew the boy was saying something, but he didn't know what he was saying. He says he got closer, he realized his boy's hanging on there and he can't see his dad. And he said all he's doing is repeating after one time after another, he's saying, somebody help the boy. The boy needs help. Somebody help the boy. The boy needs help. He learned a lesson of life that as adults we sometimes really struggle with. That's what Daniel was saying. Daniel went to God and said, somebody help the boy. The boy needs help. That's what God wants us to see. Daniel was this man of incredible faith, of incredible commitment, and he was this man of incredible dependence on his God. And they got down on their knees and they prayed, because if something needed to be done, it wasn't going to be done because they did it. It was going to be done because God did it. And God worked through Daniel and interpreted the dream. And as you get toward the end of chapter 2, you see King Nebuchadnezzar, follower of many gods, starting to crumble the first time a little bit, falling on his knees, prostrating himself, bowing down and praying and telling Daniel, your God is better than all the gods of Babylon. That seems to be the point. We've been trying to get the kids to understand as they go through the marketplace and the other areas of the VBS, certain of the characters portray Babylonians who don't believe in the one true God. And there's nothing better that we can do as God's children than to live in such a manner that somebody falls down before God and recognizes Him for the awesome God that He is. What a great story in the first two chapters of Daniel. What great lessons for us. We can be as dependent as Daniel was, as committed as Daniel was, if we'll trust the way that Daniel trusts and have that faith in God. If you're not a Christian, we pray that you take care of that tonight. Make your life right with God. That when He comes, even as we're about to sing, when He comes, you will be one of the ones who is watching for Him, waiting for Him, living every day in anticipation of His return. you don't know how to start that relationship, talk to us. We'd like to share that with you. But if you already know that, take care of it tonight while you still have the chance. For those of us that are Christians, and there's a lot, at least for me, there's a lot I can learn from a 15-year-old boy. A lot I can learn. And it didn't stop there. Because as you continue through that chapter, you find out Daniel served in that kingdom until the beginning of the reign of Cyrus. He was in that kingdom for about 70 years. That whole lion's den story that we'll come to later in the week with the kids, that didn't happen to boy Daniel. That happened to old man Daniel. And yet he was still faithful to God. He may have been at least 80, probably mid-80s by the time that occurred in his life. And yet, here was a man of faith, a man of commitment, a man of dependence, because he was a boy of faith and a boy of commitment and a boy of dependence. Start that faith early so we can serve our God. If we can help you, let us know while we stand and sing.
When Jesus comes.